Well, first of all, I hope he does turn pro because he's a terrific player, and the sooner you get him into your system, the better. Which is brings me to this whole debate about, oh, is it good if he turns pro or not? There's really no downside to Quinn Hughes turning pro. Most teams in the Canucks position, they're begging their prospects, or they'd love their prospects to turn pro, because at least you bring them under your umbrella. You get control of their development, and whether that's in the NHL or the AHL, that's still a lot more control and a lot more hands-on than what it is if he you know, goes back to college for another year. So this is entirely up to Quinn Hughes. If Quinn Hughes wants to turn pro and does so understanding that there is not a job guaranteed for him in the NHL with the Canucks, and that turning pro may mean starting your pro career in the AHL, honestly, there isn't a significant downside here for the Canucks. If he's not ready for the NHL, he plays in the AHL. If he struggles in the AHL, well, you have time to address at that level what it is he's struggling with. You certainly, by December, you have him going to the Team USA's World Junior team, presuming that he's going to be picked for that. And if it's still, if he's still not ready for the NHL after that, it's not the end of the world if he goes and plays major junior hockey for 2 months and then, you know, comes back to you at the end of the year. There's a lot of upside, a lot of positive things by getting Quinn Hughes to turn pro, and really, as far as I can see, not a whole lot of downside.
That is Ian McIntyre, who joined us on Canuck Central at noon yesterday, talking about Quinn Hughes and how IMAC believes the best course of action for Quinn Hughes is to turn pro for next season. And I think Ian is going to get his wish, because I'm under the belief that Quinn Hughes will indeed sign with the Canucks this summer and he will turn pro. The question is, will he start the season in Vancouver, or is he most likely bound for Utica?
It all plays into it. It remains to be seen over the next week or so. Of course, we'll be broadcasting live next week, Monday to Wednesday at Rogers Arena, as we have a chance to sit down, hopefully, and talk with Quinn Hughes and talk with some of the young prospects and talk with Nando Eggenberger, for goodness sakes.
Right, and we'll talk to about Nando Eggenberger as well with our good guy. Ryan Beach is on the line right now. Ryan Beach, of course, courtesy of Sportsnet 650, The Athletic, and Canucks Army as well. Beacher, what's happening, buddy? How are you?
I'm okay. I'm still recovering from the Germany meltdown yesterday.
Oh,
I have no idea.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, man.
Te-ha-ming-guk.
Yeah, so John is super happy, obviously.
Sorry, Ryan.
This is after I chirped you after they beat Sweden, so I kind of got what I deserved.
There you go. So it's all about sweet poetic justice.
Yeah, see, my co-host has my back, Beecher.
Yeah.
Playbook style.
I would like to move on from this topic. This year I decided to splurge and buy myself a Germany jersey for the World Cup, and it still hasn't come yet.
Oh.
So I get to wear that with some good pride.
Yeah, it's all good. You get to wear it for the 2022 World Cup. And
if they qualify.
I'm sure they will qualify. But the good news is, Ryan, we didn't get you on here to talk soccer. We have you on to talk prospects. And Quinn Hughes was the Canucks' first-round pick at number 7, and all of us were super giddy in Dallas when we saw the pick happen, because we can imagine the possibilities of Quinn Hughes dummying forwards and defensemen around the National Hockey League with his skating ability. The question is, will he turn pro? And like I was saying earlier, I'm of the belief that he will most likely turn pro coming up this summer. If that does happen, Ryan, how ready is he for the National Hockey League, you believe?
I think we could see your smile from a mile away. You're so excited.
Yes, that's true.
I think based on the things that conversation that Jim Benning had after the first round and kind of the vibe that I'm getting is that I do think he'll turn pro. I don't know if he'll make the team right out of camp, but he does have an opportunity to go to Utica because he's not bound by the, you know, the CHL NHL agreement. So that's also a good opportunity that team will be loaded as well with players that they hope will be part of the nucleus going forward. So, you know, he may not spend all 82 games with the Canucks, but he might spend some time with Utica, but I think he's ready for that step. I think he showed at the World Championships that he can play against men. And I think that, you know, just even, you know, what's the right word? Sheltering him in a power play role, in a kind of depth defenseman role, but, you know, getting good reps on the power play will allow him to succeed.
And when we look at the most NHL-ready defenseman in this year's draft, Dahlin was number 1, no question. And when you look at the NHL over the past decade, every year or so, 1 to 3 defensemen who are 18 to 19 years old make it as pure rookies. And do you think, outside of Dahlin in this year's draft, that Quinn Hughes may be the most NHL-ready defenseman?
I think so. I think it's also a bit circumstantial. I think that the Canucks kind of lack that player that he is. So I think that that does help his situation. I think that Noah Dobson, from a skill set side, will be, you know, as close as well. But, you know, he might not be kind of shoehorned in like as much as there. But, yeah, I think that, you know, his skill set with the ability to kind of rush and carry the puck and not, you know, really cool and calm under pressure and willing to skate with it, I think that's what stands out about him and will allow him to, you know, not get buried in the on the defensive zone, but then still get a bit of chances to be the offensive dynamo that he can be. So I think it's just kind of a combination of factors, you know, his willingness to want to turn pro, which is, it seems to be likely, the situation with the Canucks and his ability that it just, you know, he just does things that are really smart and a professional game. I think that you know, it'll be, he'll get a good chance. And also the fact that, you know, he turns 19 whenever, I believe his birthday is October 14th. So it's not like we're talking about a kid who's just going to turn 18 over the summer. You know, he's almost 19 and he'll be 10 days into the season. He's a 19-year-old, right?
Ryan, I think we all understand that Chris Tanev is probably the best partner to play Quinn Hughes with. But based on Hughes' strengths and weaknesses, am I completely crazy to think that maybe, just maybe, this is the exact partner that a guy like Eric Gudbranson has been waiting for over the past couple of years?
I would like to call you crazy. You're giving me the opportunity to do so.
Okay.
I might take
go for it. Go for it.
No, I could see that as being a good situation. I do think, in my mind, Chris Tanev is probably the best option available, just because he'll be a good safety net for him to allow him to do whatever he wants. He can move the puck well as well to Hughes in situations where he can move out, where I think Gudbranson might struggle in that kind of situation. But Gudbranson does give that size and, you know, physicality element that might be a good complementary piece to Hughes. So I think that, you know, we might see him play with both, you know, with defensive pairings as we see. The situation is so fluid based on injuries. I think that if everyone is healthy, Tanev is the best, you know, safety net for him. But I could see Gudbranson being a good complement to his skill set.
Yeah, because you want to protect your young guy, and that's exactly why Gudbranson is here, quite frankly. He's the one that's got to throw down the gloves when necessary. But is it possible that Travis Green will at some point in this year have a defense that features both Ylevi and Quinn Hughes, both rookies in the top six? Or does he try and alternate or send one down to Utica if the other one comes back up?
I think that he's going to choose whatever makes, you know, gives him the best chance to win. I think if we're looking at the current group that we have now, that, you know, I don't foresee both of them making it, just because I don't think you want to have one of them sitting in the press box while the other one is playing or things like that. You'd rather have someone like Alex Viega sitting in the press box. So that might be the situation. But if there is some sort of trade over the summer, you know, I don't think that it's going to, just because of their age, that they're going to, you know, prevent them from playing. I think that, you know, Ylevi now plays a fairly mature game. He's always been known as, you know, having a mature game. It may lack a high ceiling or a high offensive upside, but I think that he can kind of step in and do the simple and smart plays and make things happen. Where Hughes is, like I said before, it just gives you that element that the Canucks lack, and so many teams are just absolutely tripping over themselves to acquire, that I think that, you know, you put him in a sheltered role and let him do his thing, then I think it'll be good. It almost feels like it's one of those things that, you know, Green might not be super familiar with Hughes, maybe only seen him a handful of times given the rigors of the NHL season, but put him on the NHL ice and put him on the power play and let him do his thing, I think he'll be blown away, and it might get to a point where you just can't take him out of the lineup.
We're talking to Ryan Beach here on Sportsnet 650 about the Canucks draft in 2018. What do you think of Jet Wu? Because, you know, I think we both agree, it was definitely defensible to take him at 37. He was definitely in that range, anywhere from 30 to 40, depending on how you rank him. The belief from the Canucks is he has way more offensive upside than he's shown so far. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've kind of told the story a few times, but, you know, he was a point-per-game player with Moose Jaw to start the year. I believe it was 17 points in 17 games, and then unfortunately he suffered a shoulder injury, and then he came back, and at the time, Josh Brook had returned from injury, and then the Moose Jaw Warriors had made a big trade to acquire Cale Clegg as well. So he basically, Wu came back and he was asked to play more of a defensive role. They started with Brook and Clegg together, but it was kind of, you know, two guys wanting the puck to make things happen, and it didn't work. So then Wu was inserted on the right side with Clegg and asked to be the defensive safety net for him, and he excelled really well. I think, you know, with Clegg, if I'm not mistaken, Clegg will be graduating in professional hockey next fall. So that gives Wu an opportunity to be, an offensive dynamo for the Warriors. And I think the offense will follow. I don't think he's a really overly creative player with the puck or things like that, but he does make smart passes. He's really effective mm-hmm. in the neutral zone at transitioning in and out of the zone and making things happen. And if he gets some power play time, I think he has a heavy enough shot and good puck distribution skills to, you know, make things happen. So I think that, you know, his stats don't jump off the page right away, but, you know, the context added to it, I think he does have a lot more to give in the long run. I really do like the pick. You know, it may not have been someone that I would have taken at that time, but it's a really, defensible and justifiable pick at that spot. He was, you know, a consensus first round pick for most of leading up to this year and throughout the first part of this year. And unfortunately, that shoulder injury and then, you know, not meeting expectations offensively, he kind of fell down. But when you look at the underlying numbers, he was really, really effective in the defensive zone, really effective at not giving up the blue line to oncoming attackers, even though he was being, you know, targeted quite regularly because teams were avoiding the Clegg side. So I think that there's a lot more to give for him. And I think it's a really good bet based on where they were at that point in the draft.
I think that was a really good point you made about defensible picks, because this year's draft, there seemed to be a lot of consensus. We're all like, you know what? All these picks are defensible. We all love the Quinn Hughes one. You know, we like the Jet Wu one. You go down the list, a lot of guys we like. The one pick that you and I definitely sort of had our eyes turn a little bit was taking Tyler Madden at 68, considering Jake Wise went 69, the pick after, to the Chicago Blackhawks. But listening to Judd Brackett describe Madden and why he took him, they did draft Madden because they believe he has the higher upside, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and after talking with some people following the draft, I think that, you know, the Canucks weren't alone in the thought process that, you know, Wise might be closer to his ceiling and he was getting a lot more soft points, as they like to call it, which is referring to easy points given situations. And if you want a kind of a more Canucks example, someone like Hunter Shinkarik, you know, tore up the AHL, but that was, he was doing things that he likely would not be able to do in the NHL. So that's why, you know, they moved on from him. And that's kind of a similar idea that teams that team with Jack Wise, and it wasn't just the Canucks who saw that with him. So in that sense, I can understand why passing on that and going for a speedy, grittier kind of center like Madden, who has more, you know, room to grow physically, puck skills and all those things, it might be a better bet in the long run. They do seem very high on him. And in watching him throughout the season, I can see, you know, it's one of those things where you feel like there's something there, it's just not quite getting there. And it's very similar to Adam Gaudette, which is, you know, when, you know, at the time I wasn't too familiar with Adam Gaudette, and it looks, you know, underlying numbers and things like that, like a really bad bet. But, you know, watch the game, you're like, okay, I can understand why a team might be, you know, interested in a player like this. He kind of has that raw skill set. And as we saw when he got a bigger role with Northeastern, he took off. With that being said, you don't want to always be chasing that potential because, you know, a lot of the times it doesn't work. More times than often, you're going to get players that aren't the Adam Gaudette than anything. But I think overall, it was a good, you know, a good thought process behind it and suggesting that, you know, he has more room to grow on his body, his puck skills, his movement, everything. You know, there's just more to give. And I think that going into Northeastern next year where Gaudette was, because he graduated, and Stevens and Sakara have all graduated this year, there's a big void offensively for that team. Mm. And I think that someone like Madden is going to be able to step in and be given an opportunity right away, and then it's in his hands to kind of run away with it from there. And you really can't ask for more from a prospecting board, no matter where they are. It's just like be given an opportunity to do what they need to do, and then they just kind of have to seize it. And, you know, talking with Hughes and Wu and Madden and all three of them, the overriding theme when speaking to them is that these kids seem like very smart, accountable kids who, you know, you want to say they have like really good leadership qualities, but they're also very self-reflective to understand what needs to be done at the next level. So I think that, you know, looking at this draft class and last draft class, that's something that the Canucks have been targeting, is players that understand their weaknesses and want to do everything they can to be better. And I think that's a really good quality and something that really stands out with Madden as well.
Some big shoes for him to fill at Northeastern, considering all the success they had with Adam Gaudette winning the Hobie Baker there as well. But obviously, we're hoping the best for him. We're talking to Ryan Beach. Thursdays at the Beach, Sportsnet 650, the playbook with Sat and John. The Canucks also drafting a couple other players with some upside here. One of them, Tony Uttinen, a flashy offensive defenseman. And it's pretty clear that his intelligence level is pretty high, his hockey IQ pretty high. So another example of the Canucks trying to bang on that upside here.
Yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of times when we do that, you know, 100 less through those, it's kind of hard to pinpoint numbers. And then when the Canucks announced taking Tony Uttinen, you're like, oh, okay, I remember him. And going back, you definitely see him as a really smart puck mover. who can, you know, he always has his head up, seems to do really well in all situations. I think he has more to give offensively. And when he has more of a bigger role in the Liga next year, I think that we'll kind of see his numbers kind of tick up from there. You know, he was held to 0 points in 11 games with the Para, but had 12 points in the second division. But he's been a regular with the Finnish program. He's been a captain a few times from there. He seems to be a kid who kind of understands what he needs to do to get better and things like that. So I think that, again, he just seems to be a player that kind of understands what he needs to do, but he has a really good base of skills to build off of and kind of build on from there.
Now, eventually, the Canucks also traded down in the sixth, picking up two picks from the Washington Capitals. The last pick in that round, Artem Manukyan. I hope I got that right, but 5'7", a smaller forward. But it was just a year ago they drafted Petrus Palmu, and since then, he's won the Rookie of the Year in the Finnish League. He signed a pro contract. He's making his way to Vancouver for development camp. Is Manukyan here just a similar gamble where they're banking on this guy playing larger than his size, or is there something really special to him?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. You know, the kid put up 105 points in 60 games in the MHL last year, which is the KHL Junior League. No other player in the history of the league has done that, so that kind of points to how gifted he is offensively. And that was done as a 19-year-old, and then they took him this year after he appeared in 24 games in the KHL and had 2 points, but also put up a point per game pace with the MHL team again. So I think it's a reasonable roll of the dice at that point in the draft, and that's the kind of thing you want to do at that point is, you know, take a home run swing for a really gifted offensive player who might be too small or might have a flaw to their game and hope that they'll be able to kind of round that out. And I think the Manukyan is a good risk at that point. You know, they gained an extra pick, dropped down 25 spots and probably got a player that they were very high on. And I think Judd Brackett even kind of suggested that the case that, you know, they were considering taking him earlier, but they had the opportunity to add a pick next year. So they took that chance and hoped he would be there, and he was there. And so, you know, it kind of worked out well perfectly for them. So, you know, given that he was playing in the KHL, they do own his rights for 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no real rush for it. He'll get a good opportunity in the KHL to kind of play more. And then we can kind of assess in a year or two to see how he's adjusted to that level. You know, the biggest knock on him is his size. It's listed at 5'7 and about 140 pounds on majority of the sites. I think he's probably more closer to 150 or 155 at this point, but I think that, you know, he's got more room to grow there despite being a smaller. And if you can kind of play the way that Palmu does, is using your intelligence and in using your low center of gravity effectively, I think that he can kind of excel at the KHL, and then hopefully we go from there.
Yeah, and that's a good point too, because when people ask what's the value in having extra 6th and 7th round draft picks, well, it's to draft players like Manukyan and even Petrus Palmu, because if these guys go undrafted, you have to sign them to contracts, and oftentimes you're not sure they're ready enough, or you can convince a guy to leave the KHL. So if you can bank a bunch of these players like Palmu, Manukyan in the 6th and 7th round over the next few years, you're giving assets. You're going to be able to hold on to some assets moving forward that gives you more flexibility. So there's a lot of value in that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think Petrus Palmu is an example of it working out perfectly so far. He still has to make it in the AHL and the NHL. But even if one of these players, if it's Manukyan or Palmu, plays in the NHL, then I think that's a home run. And taking these risks is perfect. And I think from an asset management standpoint, they did perfectly. They added a 6th-round pick for next year. And if they want to add another 2 prospects in that round next year, they can. Or they, you know, they have some sort of tradable asset, no matter how small it is, to, you know, make a move if they need to.
And one player we were asked a lot about because his name was fantastic, and he's actually going to be at the Canucks development camp, is Nando Eggenberger. And you know what? You know, you and the guys at Canucks Army had him as a top 100 prospect, did not get drafted. If you had an extra 7th-round pick, maybe you draft him and you have an extra asset. That's not bad. But considering his age, he would have to go back to the 2019 draft, right? And what do you think of him as a player?
Yeah, correct. So because he played in Europe this past summer, or sorry, past year, it's the summer now, thankfully. this past year is that he's not eligible to be signed as a UFA. He has to go back and play another year. And actually, he was selected by Oshawa in the CHL import draft this year, and he has made it pretty clear that he's going to make the jump over to North America unless something came up. So I anticipate that we'll actually see him in the OHL next year, and he'll be a player to watch for sure. As you said, yeah, we had him ranked as the 98th prospect, and some other, you know, pundits had him ranked in that same similar range, and it was kind of surprising that he fell all the way through, just because, you know, he held his own in the NLA league in Swiss, and has a really good shot. He uses his body effectively. I think that he was a player that the Canucks had some interest in, but they just ultimately didn't select him because the goalie that they really had their eyes on, Matthew Thiessen in the seventh round was still available, and they didn't want to pass up the potential of him being there. So they kind of let Eggenberger go through and then hopefully, you know, invite him to development camp. So far, so good. And I'm really interested to see how he'll do in this environment and see how he does with some of the other players. But I think he's definitely someone to keep an eye on. He has a really raw skill set, but I think that he's kind of building towards something pretty good here. I think he'll be a good, you know, a good bet to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. And we are out of time, Ryan. So next time we have you on, we'll have to go over some what other teams did, some winners and losers out of the draft. We've had some more time to dissect these things. And the top prospect game, well, the Canucks top prospect game that includes a lot of their prospects is coming up next Thursday. So we'll talk about that and break it down. And I'm sure you're not surprised at all to see Philip Zadina lighting it up in Detroit Red Wings development camp.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Those are some pretty slick moves. And he seems like a kid who's going to now try to prove everyone wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Brian, it's always a pleasure getting you on the show. The work you've done with the prospects this entire year and the past couple years is second to none in this market. We're lucky to have you and appreciate it, man.
I love you, Ryan.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. Talk to you next.
Thanks, Ryan. That's a lot of love for Ryan Beach.
We got so used to having him here in the studio. Now that it's on the phone, I feel like it's so hollow.
Miss him. Yeah. We miss him. And you know what? Because we've had him on for a full hour, we didn't have enough time to get to all the other things.
Yeah.
Give us more to talk about next time we have him on, because you know me, dude. I can talk draft all day.
Sportsnet 650.